Joining us now are our gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. It's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
It's great to be here.
And Brooklyn is still there. It's not moving anywhere. It is growing tremendously, especially in the downtown Brooklyn area. It's like another Manhattan.
It really is.
Well, also, I assume that means because Brooklyn real estate is booming, more work for building inspectors like the two of you.
Yes.
We like that.
We like that. What has happened with our business is that it's actually converted more to apartment inspections and inspecting the infrastructure of the apartment buildings, because for people's concerns about assessments down the road, and so they know what's going on, and also what's going on in the apartment. Sometimes you do an apartment, bad wiring and things like that. So we've been doing a little bit more of that.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, when you join us, we take calls on all sorts of matters of people, from do-it-yourself to what to do about
the air conditioning, the plumbing, the electrical.
And right now we're in the middle of a weird summer. It's been
I think it's typical
hot.
New York. It's just hot.
It's hot.
It's hazy, hot, and humid.
But it's up and down. It's up and down. And
so the biggest thing that people do have to, especially even now, because we've had so many weeks of hot weather, that, I mean, I have on my system, I had the Nest thermostat that I've spoken about, and several times I got home and all of a sudden Con Ed taps into the Nest thermostat to raise your temperature to alleviate that high demand that they have, especially in the evening from around 6, 7 o'clock at night to around 9, 10 o'clock at night. What that tells me is that people's air conditionings are on constantly, and it really is. Even if you clean the filter at the beginning of the season, I think now is a good time to do that again.
So what should they do?
That reminds me. I got to clean mine.
Yes.
Yes.
What should we do? We don't want to come back to a really hot house. On the other hand, don't want to use up all that electricity when nobody's in the house.
Well, the unfortunate part is that there are two things. There is the old school way, which is basically if your schedule is pretty consistent, you get a clock thermostat and you set the times of days when you know you'll be home. So during the day, if you don't have any pets at home, you can let that temperature go up to maybe 85 degrees during the day, and that's not so bad. And then about an hour before you come home, you have it set back to 73, 74, whatever's comfortable for you, and you bring that temperature down. If you happen to have a remote access thermostat, then you just turn it to what, and about an hour before you go home, you turn that temperature back on. But if you have just regular window or wall units, then most of them, some of them are starting to come out with clocks, and I would imagine, I haven't really looked into it, and something I should look into, is whether some of them have actually internet capabilities.
Yeah.
And that would be a great thing.
I have a wall unit that has a clock, and I can't figure out how to set it.
The manual they send you is bigger than the air conditioning.
I push a lot of buttons, and then it says set, and suddenly something doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to happen.
One of the things that people, a lot of people don't understand, that you not only have to extract the heat from the room's air, which touches you, but all of the furniture and the walls also have that heat in it, and your room will not get comfortable until all the amenities in that room is also extracted from the heat and take it outside.
Yeah, that's a lot of work for your air conditioner.
It is. It's invisible, but as the temperature is reduced in your room, the air room, then the furniture starts giving off the heat into that room also.
Let me take care of a little bit of business. The number here is 212-433-9692 if you want to speak to the gurus. 212-433-WNYC. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate, or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we're also, in a little while, we're going to tell people the quiz.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, we can do that right now.
Okay. Do you want to do it? My pleasure.
No.
Okay. Okay, here we go. Name the pair of electrical devices found at the top and bottom of many staircases. Working together, each one can open or close the lights, or turn on or turn off the lights. These safety devices are necessary for all darkened stair halls.
Hmm.
So in other words,
I know about them, but I've never known they had a name.
They actually have a specific name. Those devices at the top, at the bottom, and bottom that turn on and off the lights.
They actually have. This actually has two names. One is the common name, and the other is the generic name that the industry uses. And if you guess either one of them, you get a book.
So if you know the answer, give us a call at 212-433-9692. And lots of people are calling in.
Okay, let's go. Let's go to them.
Okay, the first caller is Nick from Long Island.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Leonard. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. And gentlemen, thank you so much. I've listened to you guys for a long time, and I get so much out of it.
Oh, great.
My question is, about a year ago, we'd done a gas conversion from oil to gas,
mm-hmm.
and everything was good for about 6 months. And then approximately 4 or 5 months ago, we started getting water in the basement. Now, we live in it's very sandy, so we've never had an issue in 35 years. Mm-hmm. And it appears like it's coming where the chimney is, but it's only when it's very heavy rain. I wonder if you have any thoughts or a process of elimination.
Send us a photograph?
Well, there's a couple of things. It could be, did they take the chimney cap off the chimney?
No, we done a chimney liner and put a cap on top.
Oh, so it happens when it rains. So what's happening is I believe that water is actually leaking around the chimney liner and draining into your basement. I think that they didn't seal the top of the chimney liner very well. And so water is leaking around it, and because the metal... It allows the water to flow easily over it. It's probably draining right into it. Where in the old situation, where it was a clay liner, the clay would absorb the water before it got to the basement.
There's also another thing that could be taking place, that when the combustible gases that come out of the furnace is a big majority of that is actually water, and if that the chimney is not drawing properly, that water will condense inside the chimney and then flow down into the chimney, then into your basement.
But he said it's worse when it rains.
It's worse when it rains.
Right?
That's a leakage.
Yeah.
It is only when it's really, really heavy rain. And you know what? I think the first idea, I never even thought about it because it's actually above the clay pipe a little bit. And
yeah.
It might be catching. So I'm going to cut it down. And what's your suggestion to eliminate this?
Well, I would actually seal the top of where the liner and the clay liner meet, and maybe even put a piece of flashing on the top there to draw the water away from the round liner and over the top of the chimney cap.
You know, there's like a flashing point all the way around.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make it out of sheet metal or something like that in order to drain away.
Or whatever.
And the cavity that below it, around the chimney, they usually put in a slushing of cement or some sort of compound to fill it in so that nothing gets into that area.
Thank you for calling us, Nick. Sarah in Brooklyn wrote in, when it's really humid outside, the front of my apartment building doesn't latch correctly, locking out all of us tenants. I think the issue is that the wooden door frame sags and misaligns all the door hardware. Is there anything I can do?
We have a trouble with that with our office.
From time to time, the wood door, it doesn't sag or anything. It just expands. It just gets, like, if we have, like, in our office, if we have, like, two or, like, a week or two of heavy rain, it's really hard to open the door. One of the things you could try temporarily is to run paraffin wax around the entire frame of the door. The second thing is the door has to be adjusted in size. And we're talking about the adjustment of size of less than the thickness of a saw blade. So you're really taking off maybe between a 16th and an 8th of an inch.
So just take a little plane and go on.
They can plane it down. They could sand it down. But they do have to take off probably about a 16th to an 8th of an inch all the way around the door.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's go to Irene from Brooklyn. By the way, Irene, you're listening to WNYC, WNYC.org. My guests are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence, Hugh Bell.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi, Irene from Brooklyn.
Hi, how are you?
Good, what's up?
So I had brand new steps constructed in front of my house. a mason did it, and it's done with those blocks, those whatever cinder blocks,
uh-huh.
and then we have stucco put over it, and then the inside is sheetrocked. But we have bluestone that was placed on top on the platforms and all the steps. But when it rains, it's always leaking into the space underneath the top entrance. So there's
now,
a top entrance and a bottom entrance.
So this...
we were told that the bluestone is slightly warped, but I don't know. Is there any way to fix this?
Well, the thing is, now you said the sheetrock on the underside of all this?
Well, it's inside. Like, there's a, the steps have, like, a, there's two entrances to the house.
Yeah.
The top entrance and the bottom entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And below, the inside the steps, it's hollowed.
Yeah.
You can walk in there and then go into the house.
Like a stairwell. You go down a step.
Right.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I would never put sheetrock underneath, because that's kind of outside. But I would have never put sheetrock there, because sheetrock is really not, is vulnerable to moisture and water damage. So I probably wouldn't have used that. But
okay.
I have to say that the masonry steps themselves, unless the guy, unless the mason built it with some kind of waterproofing membrane, whether that be modified bituminous roofing material or copper or something like that, there's no way that it's ever not going to leak, because the water, even if the bluestone is perfectly put in and all that, it's going to leak around the mortar joints.
Yeah, you have to understand that masonry concrete is not a waterproof material. It is highly absorbing. It acts like a sponge and it drinks the water in. So that if it's not enough flashing between the exposed area and the unexposed area, you're going to have leakage through that area.
Yeah, I think that if the mason knew that there was going to be drywall underneath this, he should have actually constructed in a slightly different way to produce a waterproof result.
Thank you, Irene.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's interesting that the three things that we've talked about all involve rain and water. Maybe the answer is just to move to a place where there's no rain. We could
Arizona
or Oklahoma, where we were just talking about the Dust Bowl,
and where you have no drinking water. Where they
we have a few people calling in with what they believe are the answers to the quiz, which is name the pair of electric devices found at the top and bottom of many stair structures working together. Each one can turn on or turn off the lights. These safety devices are necessary for all darkened stair halls. Derek from the Upper West Side, what do you think it is?
I think it's motion detectors.
No. But that's good, but you're thinking too modern. these have been around since electricity and lights were invented.
Yeah.
David from Riverside, what do you think?
Riverdale.
Riverdale, I'm sorry.
Three-way switch. I got to admit, I had to look up what the technical term is. It appears that it's referred to as a single pole double throw switch.
Yeah. Or SPDT.
Right. But I did actually know the three-way switch.
Okay. So
yeah, that's an interesting switch, by the way. It can't work alone. It has to work in pairs, because both switches at the top of the stair and at the bottom of the stair have to be interconnected, so that when one lets the electricity flow through to make the light turn out, the other one has to be closed, and vice versa. And they work independently but collectively. It's an interesting device.
So what does David get? Coming up with the right answer.
He gets a copy of Recipes for Home. No,
Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
The problem is, Al, you've written too many books. You can't remember all the titles. We're going to put you on hold, David. Somebody will take your address, and then we'll send you the book. Okay?
Okay. And good luck.
And, okay, Victor from the Upper West Side writes, just moved to the Upper West Side and need to renovate the apartment. Should I install a split system AC? They seem very expensive compared to Europe, where they are the norm. Will the prices of split systems drop?
Well, as far as economics predictors, that's not really my area of expertise, but they have been coming down in price. It also depends on how many he wants to put in. It also depends on the ones that he wants to put in and the brand, whether it's Daikin's or it's Mitsubishi or it's LG there's so
are
many.
Are they
brands.
All equal?
Yeah, they all work about the same. I mean, the only thing is that some of them may actually give you a energy benefit with a Con Ed, where they reduce there's a program, I believe, with Con Ed, and I'm not sure which brand it is. You'd have to look into that. But the thing is that a lot of it is that you're paying for this remote control that controls that you have that wireless control. These days, they're making a lot of these split systems, or mini splits, as a lot of people like to call them, where it's basically a small air handler that you can hide above a bathroom or above a closet, and then just have the compressor outside and have it operate like a standard thermostat where it just turns on and off. I mean, all that, you know, dehumidifying and waving and fans moving all over the place, they work. But, you know, bottom line is I don't like to see my air conditioning equipment. I want it hidden. So,
Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
What a pleasure to catch you guys. I would like to discuss ice. I've got a new refrigerator. I don't have access to putting a proper water filter on my cold water line. And I've been working with a man who's quite knowledgeable in plumbing as to create a reservoir system and be able to put the water, spring water, into a reservoir and drop it down into the ice machine. But we can't get any PSI strong enough to activate the ice machine. Do you have any ideas on this?
Or
I possibly get a small pump in some way? I used a Brita box and took the tap off.
Can I ask you a question? Where do you where is the location of this?
Where do you live?
Yeah,
Flemington. Flemington is in western Hunterdon County.
In New Jersey.
And our water is very hard. And
it's filled with, yes, it has a lot of calcium in it. Yes, I'm familiar with that. The thing is that you have to pressurize it, and there are little tiny little pumps that could pump the water, the water that you have already, say, filtered out into into a pressure tank, and it's a little pressure pump that could activate with a float mechanism or with a pressure regulator back
you
and
have
forth.
A brand on that,
but
sir.
No, but let me ask you a question. So this is actually a very interesting thing. So what is your water source?
Well, I'm in an apartment building.
Okay, so you're in
an apartment. And there's a very large water tower up on the hill, and then I guess there's pumps in each building.
But the water that you want to use for your ice maker, where's that water?
Ice maker. Oh, there's a wonderful spring nearby, and I can get all the spring water I want very cheaply.
How do you get the spring water from the spring to your apartment?
Human sweat.
Okay. You know what?
Yeah,
I have to say that this is
to put a cistern on top of it, but I don't get sufficient PSI.
I understand.
So I'd like to know if there anybody manufactures some sort of little, even a piece of lab equipment where I could have a mini pump.
Yeah.
And then just run this water down.
Here's
and
what
I
I'm
going to
here's what I'm going to suggest to you. My email address is larryubell@gmail.com. Email me, and I think we need to have a longer conversation about this because this is so individual to you that not a lot of people are going to get a lot out of it, but it's an interesting problem, and I'd like to see what we can do with it. Okay?
And we also have to go to a break.
Right. Okay.
The guests are the gurus of how to. Some of my longest running guests. In fact, I think, Alvin, you were here before I came.
Are we really guests by this time?
Okay, my very good friends.
We're residents.
My very good friends, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where handle is @LeonardLopate. First this. And we're back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, or Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. I like using both names. Which ones do you prefer?
Either or. It doesn't matter.
I like reading Lawrence Ubell, but I like hearing Larry Ubell.
Whatever. You can call us at 212-433-9692 or write to us online at wmyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. People have been writing in. Anne from Ridgewood, New Jersey, says she has moss growing on the north side of her roof and on her garage. Is this something she can ignore, or should she get rid of it? And if she should, how should she get rid of it?
If what the moss is growing on, and this is very important, is either asphalt shingles, brick, masonry, or something like that, she can ignore it. If it's growing on, or vinyl. If it's growing on wood, that's a problem. because it will eventually cause rotting action of the wood surfaces. So that needs to be cleaned off. I have to say that the problem is a lot of people clean off a roof with a power washer, and unfortunately, when you use a power washer, if you're not above the shingles and spraying it in the direction that the water normally runs, you're going to end up running water up underneath the shingles, and then you're going to have water on the inside of your house. So it's very important that you clean it properly. But if it's an asphalt shingle, it just looks bad, but it's not going to affect the asphalt at all.
Brian from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The problem I've been having is with the some drywall. It's I have a hairline crack that goes from the floor to the top of the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And I've repaired this with tape and joint compound. And it seems like, you know, I usually do it in the wintertime. When summer rolls around, the crack returns. And it's, you know, it doesn't crack through the tape. It's cracking, you know, above the tape. So I patched this twice, and I'm starting to get a mound of joint compound. So mm-hmm. I don't want to go that route again.
Well,
and I really don't know what to do.
Well, what happens, you live in a wood frame building, I believe. Is that true? Well, it is not unusual that in the wintertime, the relative humidity of the outside of the building is low, and therefore the wood framing of the building contracts, and the building should actually gets a little smaller, and then what happens? The crack closes up. In the summertime, or opens up. It depends upon how the building was built. And then in the summertime, when the relative humidity is high, all of a sudden, all of the wood starts to swell up, and the cracks open up with it. And this is a problem. The only way you could say repair it is that when you do the spackling and cut out all along the crack, get this wide, like 6-inch fiberglass compound taping material and put it over that crack and then spackle it in nice and smoothly. And maybe the crack will not open up, but it'll wrinkle a little bit, but it'll be less concerning.
I've done that twice.
But so I have a question.
It's actually cracking over the tape.
Yeah, I have a question. Is there actually a stud behind the seam?
There's probably one fairly close to it.
Okay, that's the problem. It's a non-supported seam.
That's another thing.
Yeah,
yes.
If the seam does not have a piece of wood behind it, then there's nothing holding the two edges. And like my father, it's not actually the building that's expanding and contracting. It's actually the drywall itself that's expanding and contracting. So how do you fix that? That's a challenging one, because now you have to basically open up the wall, put a stud in there behind it, support that seam, put the drywall back, and then tape, spackle, and paint. And so it might have been an error or an error from the original construction. You know?
Put a stud, or could I just put a bracing, like 2x4 or something, between the studs and
if you can get behind it, you could put what they call cats, which are horizontal 2x4s on the flat, and that could support that seam also.
Bernie from New York City asks, should you steam clean an in-the-wall air conditioner?
Steam clean an in-the-wall air conditioning? Well, even if it is an in-the-wall air conditioning, the air conditioning is usually in a sleeve of some sort, and that air conditioning could come out. And I don't believe you should steam clean it. I think you should just wash it off with a very high-powered hose or something like that. Some people who live in apartment houses actually take the air conditioning out and put it in the bathtub and then wash it off, let it dry out, and put it back in. If you do any kind of cleaning whatsoever on these in-the-wall or in-the-window air conditioning, unplug it. Unplug the device while you're doing the cleaning, let it dry out, and then put it back.
And if it doesn't, if it looks like it shouldn't get wet, the parts, don't get them wet, like wires or the electronics or the digital displays. Don't get them wet.
Pauline on Twitter asks, what possible issues should I consider when I'm purchasing a home that was built during the colonial period?
The biggest one actually for that is actually wood-destroying insects. And of those wood-destroying insects, the two would be old house borers and powder post beetles. Powder post beetles are tiny little beetles, and when you tap on the wood, dust falls out. And if you have that, the whole wood could actually be like Swiss cheese, but tiny little Swiss cheese. The second issue is foundation. A lot of these are fieldstone foundations, which basically the only thing holding them together is gravity. And I've done many inspections of colonial or early 19th century buildings, and the foundations are all over the place. They're pushing out, they're bulging. There's a lot of stuff, and you know, so that's what you really need to look for.
And if you're tall, you have to worry about the height of doorways.
That is really interesting, that the average height during the Civil War of the U.S. males were 5'7". So I did an inspection all the way out on Long Island, and the entry hall was like I could actually reach up and just touch the ceiling, and my elbow was still bent. I'm only 5'7". And the buyer was a very tall guy, but he just loved the house, so he was going to put up with that. So you're right, short doorways and short ceilings.
Yeah, if you go into the Wyckoff house, which was built in 1640, the doorways are low and everything else.
Everything's
tiny. You got to bend down when you go through it. I mean, I feel like a giant when I walk through that building.
I know. You go to sometimes Civil War museums and you see the uniforms and you think they were built for children.
Yeah.
Well, you get a lot of bumps on your forehead.
Yeah.
Doug from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a toilet question.
Yes.
I live on the second floor of a 5-story, 200-unit building.
Yes.
And I have a toilet that does not have a tank.
Flush valve.
About every fourth or fifth flush, the stuff does not go down. What do you think is causing this?
He has a flush valve.
He has a flush valve.
Yes, I guess that's
And you live on what floor?
The second.
Mm-hmm.
The second floor from the you should have good pressure.
No, what he's saying is every second or third flush, it doesn't work.
That's because he doesn't live in Flushing.
But what floor does he live in?
Second, but every second or third flush.
Every fourth or fifth flush.
He'll flush, it'll work, and then on the third or fourth one, it doesn't flush all the way.
Well, sometimes if you know the inside of the
which flush, he doesn't.
Yeah, flush valve, all right. Sometimes the diaphragm inside is not all the way shut down onto it and lets the chamber fill up and gives it enough time for the pressures. It is quite possible that the flow to your flush valve is not as heavy as it could be. So you, by flushing water, an abundance of water loses from the system, and you could have a reduction in pressure. If you wait a little while, maybe about less than three or four or five seconds, and then flush, I bet it would be okay.
But I have another question, really, if this is problems is persisting. When was the last time that valve was rebuilt?
I have no clue.
Yeah, that's what it's time to do. These valves are a lot like carburetors in cars. And carburetors in old-style cars need to be rebuilt. The rubber wears out. The springs become less spring-like, and so maybe at this point probably needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah, well, there's a little bleeder valve inside the diaphragm. If that has a little bit of dirt in it, it also won't permit the unit to close and let the pressure build up again.
And the dirt is very common. I mean, if you ever pull out the aerators on faucets, or you pull out the shower heads and run water through them backwards, the amount of debris that comes out is ridiculous. And we have in New York filtering systems, the best water in the country, and that's what's floating around. So it's not uncommon for dirt to get into these systems and stop them from working properly.
Let's take another call. Diana from Ocean Park. Is it
Ocean Port?
Port, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I'd like to redo my family room. This is a house that was built like in 1973, and it's got about a 14-foot ceiling. And so there's a brick wall, red brick with black mortar, quite ugly.
Yes.
And it's the whole end of the room with a fireplace, and then the fireplace was built, the opening, the hearth was built into that.
Right.
Well, so I would love to do a marble fireplace, and it's not going to go from one side to the other. But outside on the fireplace, I had to have some patching done, and my landscaper told me about it, so I called a mason in. He goes, "Well, I can do what I can do, you know, and then we'll seal it and we'll see." Mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking, oh, I've got cracks in my fireplace. Is there they go and do all this banging and hammering and taking down the old brick on that wall where the outdoor brickwork is done, am I risking that that is going to get much worse, and then I'm going to be spending, I was told, like $16,000 to put a whole new fireplace outside, you know, to finish it off. So I'm not sure if this is a good idea or not, this renovation.
Well, so the fireplace is interesting. It depends upon how that fireplace was built. Sometimes the fireplace is part of a structural condition of the building above. There may be something, depending upon the firebase foundation, to support some portion of the building. That happens quite often. The idea is we have to know how that building was built and what structural capability that building that fireplace has. If the fireplace is an independent fireplace, which it is supposed to be, then you probably have no problems with trying to remove something and cleaning it up and revitalizing it. But one has to know exactly what that fireplace is doing other than being a fireplace.
But I have a quick question. So you want to take off all the interior brick so you can put marble on, right?
Yeah, because it doesn't really have, you know, it's like the fireplace is kind of the wall.
Right.
You know,
it's part of a, it's part of
a. And then there's a raised hearth.
Right.
With a little brick.
Now,
you know,
so on the inside, as far as the brick on the inside is concerned, if the brick is just a veneer on the front, chipping off all those bricks shouldn't be that big a deal. And so one would have to do an exploratory to see whether those bricks on the inside are just a skin on top of the masonry structure that makes up this wall and this fireplace. And so that shouldn't be a big deal. On the outside, as far as the outside of this fireplace is the outside of the building, correct? Hello?
Yeah. I'm there.
Yeah, the outside of this brick wall, the outside of the fireplace, is the outside of the building, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, and that's a brick wall also?
Yeah,
so all that would need is just minor pointing. The most important thing about this whole fireplace thing is make sure that the hearth and the flue work properly and are cleaned and are well-maintained. And that other stuff doesn't seem like it should be a big hassle. But if we want to talk more about it, you can always email me at larryubell@gmail.com.
Alex on Twitter asks, what's the best way to paint wood paneling? Do I need to spackle the seams between strips? Must I sand it first?
Well, as far as painting a surface, anytime you paint any surface, the paint that you apply to that surface is only as good as the original paint that is on that surface. If the paint is held up very well and there are no scaling or allegation of the paint that is existing, then all you need to do is taking some a little sandpaper, go over the surface, make sure that it's good and clean, and also. This way, you don't have to really know whether it was Alcud paint or latex paint or rubber-based paint. But as long as it's sandpapered, this sandpapering scores the surface in order to key in the new paint that you're applying. But cleanliness is the very important thing, to get rid of any wax or dirt. But if it's scaling, then you're going to have to strip off the paint.
I'm going to slip another call in, but Terry, you have to make it very quick. Terry from New Jersey. Hi,
what's
you're
up,
on the
Terry?
Air.
Oh, hi. I'll make it quick. I have an old washer, and recently it starts leaking, the water leaking down at the bottom on the side, at the back, and especially warm water. When it's cold water, it doesn't leak sometimes or very little.
So
I wonder what the problem is.
It's probably one of the things I would check is to see if the hose connections are tight and secure. But the other thing is that on the inside of it where the electric valve is that determines which hot or cold is being turned on, you might want to look at those. But this is – I'm going to say even me, Mr. Handyman, when it comes to my washer-dryer, I usually have someone come in and deal with it because it really is one of those things where getting all the parts and buying all –
You really have to go in there with a flashlight and open up everything, run the washing machine, and see where the leak is actually originating from.
But I think it's probably the solenoid valve.
It's either the solenoid valve or the connection of the hose because that's only a rubber kind of hose, and it sometimes wears out.
Yes, but that's where, if it's only hot water, that's what tells me.
So, Terry, do you know where the local service place is? Somebody you could call?
Possibly. I'm just wondering, since the washer is quite old, is it still worth looking into?
No.
It?
It's not. I would actually say that you're probably going to get more efficiency and better usage out of a new one.
We have run out of time, but a reminder that if you would like to have more contact with Larry Ubell, people should write you at
LarryUbell@gmail.com and include your telephone number. Please make my life easier.
U-B-E-L-L. And we'll be seeing you soon,
yes.
Once again. When what's going to happen?
What is that? We're going to show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.